Dear Cheap Astronomy, Just How Dangerous Are Cosmic Rays? Part 3. As we discussed in Parts 1 and 2, when people talk about needing to protect astronauts from radiation, what they're talking about is particle rather than electromagnetic radiation. Particle radiation from the Sun, particularly from an energetic outburst like a coronal mass ejection, is dangerous but also manageable on short trips, say to the Moon and back. It's more of a concern on longer trips, since the pathology caused by radiation is mostly determined by cumulative dose. So, one or two Apollo missions to the Moon didn't have an effect on cancer incidence amongst the lunar astronauts, but 10 or 20 missions might have. That's partly because of the increased likelihood of encountering something like a coronal mass ejection, but it also just arises from longer exposure to the background radiation of the solar wind. But, as we mentioned in Part 2, there are some much deadlier cosmic rays out there, the galactic and extragalactic ones. We don't know for sure that a lunar mission crew never came into contact with one of these, but they are the ones we're particularly worried about in the context of a Mars mission. Again, an encounter with one might not kill you, but an encounter with 10 might. We've known about cosmic ray particles since the early 1900s, when we started detecting their collisions with Earth's upper atmosphere. In 1991, a particularly high-energy cosmic ray particle collision was observed, thereafter called the Oh My God particle, where the kinetic energy it imparted to a subsequent air shower of subatomic shrapnel was equivalent to being hit by a baseball at 100 kilometers an hour or a bowling ball dropped from shoulder height. So, next time you hear that experiments like the Large Hadron Collider could destroy the world, or even the universe, remember that there are vastly more energetic particle collisions taking place right over our heads, as they have been for billions of years now. Indeed, such collisions are commonplace across the universe. But anyway, a collision with such a high energy particle is still a subatomic event, so it's not going to punch a hole in your spaceship, but it would almost certainly send a wave of secondary particles right through the hull to irradiate the crew. The faster the primary particle is moving prior to impact, the more kinetic energy it contributes to all the secondary particle radiation that's produced. Cosmic ray particles from the Sun, thrown outwards by intense solar magnetic turbulence, can move close to the speed of light, say around 99.9% of the speed of light. Then there are rarer mid-range energy particles that might be thrown out by sources elsewhere in the galaxy, such as supernovae or neutron star mergers, events that are routinely accompanied by a gamma ray burst, but also by a burst of outflung particles that might be moving at 99.999% of the speed of light, with those extra 0.9s representing a lot of extra kinetic energy. And then there's the even rarer, ultra-high-energy cosmic ray particles, like the 1991 Oh My God particle, which would be moving at 99.999999% of the speed of light. Although these ultra-high-energy particles do seem to be in a class of their own, it's not yet settled whether they are all extragalactic. One possible source is the active galactic nuclei of distant galaxies that are pumping out jets of high-energy particles from their central supermassive black holes, but it might also be the case that ultra-high-energy particles could be coming from somewhere inside our galaxy, perhaps from a particularly energetic collision of two accreting black holes or something similarly cataclysmic. High and ultra-high energy cosmic ray particles represent a rare but more lethal hazard to deep space astronauts, where the longer the mission, the more likely you are to encounter them. Protection from these very high energy particles on a long duration mission to Mars may require some fairly high-tech solutions. A spacecraft hull with multiple layers of varying materials, perhaps including Kevlar and polyethylene, with those layers separated by air gaps, might work. NASA has also investigated materials like hydrogenated boron nitride nanotubes as hull material, but also woven into a fabric for spacesuits. We may even consider active shielding in the form of a locally generated magnetic field around a spacecraft. The power requirements for this look prohibitive unless you are flying with a nuclear reactor, but that may well be what we end up doing, whereby future commanders might find themselves saying, "Shields up."